This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into the maiden voyage of the latest production on the mid-season slump, Huddles and Stout. For those of you who have listened to some of our other productions, you'd probably be sick and tired of my voice. But for those of you who haven't heard of us before, I am the Sasquatch, and I'm delighted to introduce a new voice to the mid-season slump for the autumn period. Rocky, how are you?
Hello, Sasquatch. How are you? I'm glad to be here. Honoured.
Yeah, why don't you give us a little brief introduction? Because everyone loves giving brief introductions about themselves.
Yeah, a brief introduction. There's not much to say, there's not much to me. I've been sort of a fan of the NFL now for about half a dozen years. I'd sort of be into a lot of the American sports, baseball. I dip into MLB, NBA, all of those sort of things. In terms of domestic sports, be into the rugby. I'd be partial to a bit of Cav and GAA, but beyond that, that's me. I live a simple life.
And of the sports you do follow, what would be your sides, kind of? Because we're all kind of, I suppose, multi sport sides here on the network.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get into it, but I sort of follow the Philly, any sort of Philadelphia American sports. Rugby, it's Leinster and a bit of Ulster, because technically that's my side, but it'd be Leinster.
Yeah, that's actually something kind of probably, I suppose, unique about the podcast. It's an Irish NFL based podcast, and there's not a Patriots fan in sight.
Yes, or Dolphins. Dolphins had a big following there, the 80s and 90s.
Usually just when you get an Irish American sports podcast, you tend to get a huge Boston influence. But so there's a Philadelphia man, which we'll probably crack to later on in the show as to why. But I suppose I might just give a brief introduction to the show. So obviously, it's going to be our weekly NFL show. It is kicking off proper in 2 weeks' time, the 11th of August, and it'll probably be available wherever you find your podcasts every Thursday of every week. We'll start off with a season preview, where we'll go through the state of each of the conferences, basically. But without much further ado, I just kind of draft up a few a few discussion questions, just to kind of get the ball rolling, giving people
something to chew on
and just saying something to listen to and say, is this for me, is it not for me? So I'll kick us off and I'll ask you a very important question, and is, what is it that led to you supporting Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's not a long, complicated story. I remember in 2016, I was opening up an online Paddy Power account because I wanted to place a bet on Ireland versus Wales in the Six Nations. I ended up missing the sign-up offer. So I had, I don't know, whatever it was, 5 or 10 euro in my balance, and I just wanted to get rid of it, to be honest. So one of the nights I went on, I saw American sports, thought, what the hell? I saw the Philadelphia Phillies. The comical laziness of the name, just, I was smitten with it. So it went, bet on the Phillies. It was my first bet I ever placed, and I sort of just latched on to Philly sports, latched on to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Fair. I wish mine was as wholesome as that one. Mine's a bit of a strange one, to be honest, but I suppose I got into the NFL circa 2006, 2008.
You're a lot more tenured than I.
Yeah. like most people in this country, it starts with maybe Red Zone, because that's what comes on after Soccer Saturday or Soccer Sunday. And I just kind of was slowly watching it more and more of it. And Philly were kind of going through a stage where they were transitioning from Donovan McNabb to kind of Michael Vick, a quarterback. Now, I wasn't fully aware of maybe how Michael Vick ended up being a backup quarterback in Philly. And that might have maybe dissuaded me, but I just fell in love with kind of the whole concept of a mobile quarterback. Michael Vick in particular was exceptional. But by the time I kind of had learned what Michael Vick had maybe done, I know he's made amends. I kind of fall in love with kind of the franchise, the city, and kind of what it stood for. So it's probably a strange reason to support a side, but that's definitely how I got engrossed in the Eagles.
I don't think my origin story is particularly romantic or anything. I think a lot of people just latch on. Some people just pick a team randomly. I think that's just how a lot of people, particularly sort of NFL fans over here, they wouldn't have a connection to a particular city or a state, so they do end up just maybe supporting one of the first teams they come across.
Definitely. So now that's kind of we've got the love letter back to the NFL sorted. So next time, probably, I suppose, a few more nitty gritty questions. So quite a simple one. It's been dominating the headlines for quite a bit. Deshaun Watson, does he play?
I don't know. Does he play? I kind of flip flop on what I think the NFL is leaning. Every so often you hear a slew of articles saying he'll be gone for the year. I think recently there was a few saying 6 weeks. So it's hard to say.
I tend to lean. Like, the cynic in me kind of feels that this particular case reeks of having more than just Deshaun Watson's involvement in it. I seen recently the Texans had reached settlements for a number significant enough, like similar enough to Watson. So I get the feeling, and this is probably a bit tinfoil hatty, but the NFL is aware that the whole incident around this, it's probably another gross governance issue similar to what's going on in Washington, and I just don't think the NFL can face having two franchises caught up in that. So I think it's going to be a 6-game slap on the wrist, and it's going to be buried rather than kind of what would be the outcome if this is properly investigated. Now, that's a bit conspiracy theory-esque. I'm cognizant of that, but I do just believe it kind of does. It seems off. It seemed off from the get-go. The fact that the gentleman pursuing all the lawsuits against Deshaun Watson is very close with the McNair family. It's just from day one, it's never quite sat well. Look, the reality of it is, regardless of what the outcome is, it's probably a bad look for the game anyway, because we're alienating female fans either way, I think. I don't think true justice will be sought, and I don't think we'll ever fully know the truth in this case. It's just so interchangeable, so movable, that it's probably best if it's just dealt with swiftly and we can all move on, and hopefully those affected haven't had their lives wrecked.
It's a very bad look for the NFL. Particularly when in baseball, Trevor Bauer was just suspended for a full year, and that's not 17 games, that's whatever it is, 168. So there's pressure on them. I know Deshaun Watson and his camp have recently sort of come out to say that if it is a full year, that they will be taking case or taking action against the NFL. So whether that is hot air or whether that's what they anticipate.
I think they want, well, they might threaten. I think they do lean towards the hot air kind of element of it, because I mean, I think regardless, his side, having him sat out last year, wanting him back on the field as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So
they may take the ban to get him back on, whereas if they take it to court, that could be another season missed. So
yeah, that's a fair point.
Strange one. Next up, this is probably a bit more upbeat, but the best signing of free agency.
Yeah, I had, I think, a few candidates for this. And I'll start off with one, but it's a bit of a double whammy. It's two sides of the coin. It's a good signing and a bad signing for the same team. I think the Amari Cooper trade, rather, I think it's a great trade. I think a swap of sixth with the Cowboys and forking over a fifth for Amari Cooper. He's only 28, just 28. He's on a fairly reasonable contract. I know, I think he's probably has a similar cap hit to Stephon Diggs, and I know which I'd rather have, but if Deshaun Watson does end up playing, he had a record year with Brandon Cooks. I think with Amari Cooper, he can exceed that. I think just on the back of that, the David Njoku signing, I think it's terrible. Is the fifth highest value for tight ends. If you want to look at some of his stats, in 2021 he played 15 games, 24th in receptions, 22nd in yards. In 2020, 13 games, 45th in receptions and 47th in yards. It's a very crude way of looking at it, but it's nowhere near top 5, and that's what he is. I think it's an outrageous contract.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Do you want to alternate, or do you have one, or will I?
Yeah, I kind of had three options. I kind of had what I think is the best. I had the, and then the last two are kind of non-sexy, and the sexy pick. So I'll go with what I think actually is the best free agent signing. It's probably the re-signing of Stephon Diggs by Buffalo. I know, like, free agents, people think of teams move, players moving sides, but I just think in terms of the importance of that franchise right now, while they're still in the championship window, Stephon Diggs is an integral part of that. And I would have reservations that if Stephon Diggs left, that championship window would still be as far open as it is open right now. So that for me was probably the more important signing of the offseason.
And a good contract. Is he 24 ish annually?
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah. So that was kind of my staple. Staple pick of free agency. But if you have another option, which would it?
I grasp that some low hanging fruit here. And I think it's Russell Wilson. I think the Broncos were set up across the board. They had a fantastic team, good receivers, offensive line. Their defense was good when Von Miller was there. I know he's gone now, but it's still very good across the board. The one caveat they had was Drew Luck at the helm. Now you theoretically slot Russell Wilson into this team and it should be championship caliber. So I think if things go right for Denver, they could take it all. If things go right for Denver, I'd be a bit.
He was my sexy pick too. As well.
Oh, was he?
I kind of just scribbled him down. He was my sexy pick because you should never really underestimate the hidden value in signing kind of a good cultural player.
Absolutely.
In roster building as well too. So that's what Russell brings for you. I'll give you my non-sexy answer.
Go.
I think it's potentially Mitch Trubisky to Pittsburgh.
Wow, that is not sexy at all.
It's not sexy at all, but he's athletic. He has got a good arm. He arguably didn't get the college playing time he should have got done. I think he was thrown to the Wolves in Chicago, and I think under a coach's experience as Mike Tomlin, he could turn heads, I think. Not turn heads, but he could surprise people. I don't think he's going to make them a Super Bowl contender, but I think they could be competitive in what is now, after what Cincy did last year, it is now arguably the most competitive conference in, or division in the entire competition. So, and he maintains their relevancy anyway.
No, I think he's a good pick. He's 2017, I think he had some very good games. But no, not as you say, not sexy.
No, not sexy.
I have a couple of other games or names I'll throw out there. For the Raiders, Chandler Jones, I think it's to pair with Max Crosby, I think it's very solid. Decent contract too. Michael Gallup for the Cowboys. When he's healthy, I think he's extremely solid. And he's playing for, I think, just north of $10 million a year. If he's healthy, I think that's a very good sign for the Cowboys. Brandon Scherff for the Jags. I think if they have to maximize Trevor Lawrence. That's all they should be about. And one of the top five guards in the league. Thereabouts. I think Hassan Reddick for the Eagles. Again, very simple. Very simple. Just somebody who's going to be passing the pass, rushing the passer, I should say, rushing the passer. I think it's what Philly needed, and I think Zach Ertz for the Cardinals. I think he went to Arizona, became the de facto tight end leader there, and I think he's sort of reinvigorated his career there.
Yeah. Fair. I just gone with the tree, so happy to move on. The next question on the list was the biggest jump this season, player or franchise. So I'm happy to take anyone.
Well, I meant to have a look at some odds for comeback players as a sort of a cheat code, but I didn't. I sort of played it safe, or rather simple. I took two franchises, but a particular units of the franchises. I think Washington, their defense, huge expectations last season. I think losing Chase Young, and then all of the absences they had with COVID. They lost Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen, Kendall Fuller, Matt Ioannidis. I know Taylor Heinicke and Brandon Scherff are on the offense, but like they're big names to lose throughout the year. I expect Chase Young. He's that talented that I'm not too worried about him coming back from an injury. I expect he'll come back, and they'll have certainly one of the best front four. Certainly in that division, I think across the entire league, they're up there, and they can only improve. Another thing I had was just the Ravens across the board. I don't know if you like all the advanced football metrics, all those numbers that they throw out, that the experts ensure measure some very varying factors, but Football Outsiders have this metric, adjusted games lost. It sort of tallies up all the games that would have been affected by the players that were missed. I think they had circa about 190 game adjusted games lost, and that's far more than, I think that was second, and that was San Fran in 2019 when they had those particularly awful games in MetLife Stadium. I think they can't have injury luck as bad as they did last year. Their running backs, which is their bread and butter, that was decimated before the season. Their cornerbacks and Polamar having the schwitz in the middle of one of the games and cramps, and I think they can only come back stronger than how they finished last year. Bottom of the division, the Ravens. That's madness.
It's a very competitive division, though.
It certainly is. And it's getting better. What are your expectations for the Ravens? Or where, if you were to put them somewhere, where are you putting them?
I think that whole division is interchangeable.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's... like you'd expect... Pittsburgh. I know I kind of mentioned maybe Mitch Trubisky could be a good signing for Pittsburgh, but you expect them to take a bit of a backward step this season. And then there's too much up in the air with Cleveland. Like, who's their starting quarterback?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for that reason, I default and put Cleveland last. But again, I think...
But very easy, they can become first.
Very easy. If Deshaun Watson gets the minimum sentence, if he gets four games, I think the Browns could still potentially win that division.
Absolutely. It's just such a good division.
I'm not going to lie, though. I would have the Ravens first in that division, personally.
Oh, like, as in, if there's no issues, if Deshaun Watson starts game one, Cincinnati are right back where they were last season.
Yeah, no reason to believe they regress.
Mitch Trubisky hits the ground absolutely firing. There is still no logical reason why the Ravens can't be top of that division. Do you know what I mean? That's how tight it is.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I think you can't say somebody will. The only reason I would put or tend to put Cleveland at the bottom is the uncertainty around the quarterback Deshaun position.
Watson. Yeah, which can change overnight. Final question I had, just to kind of tease it out. The biggest drop-off this season, player or franchise? I had only gone with one. I've just gone with a franchise. I might get it out there because I know people are going to say I'm biased. But can I say the Cowboys? They just seem rife with issues. Plus they've lost arguably the best wide receiver, touched on him earlier on. There's all sorts of chat around disharmony in the locker room. I think it actually might have been Amari Cooper, but I know there was a comment thrown around that Dak Prescott was African American Kirk Cousins. I think it was Amari Cooper that came out with that. But there's all sorts of infighting, and I don't think Dak is the quarterback.
Whoa, I think
he's paid to be.
Okay.
He's a good quarterback, but he's not the quarterback he's paid to be. And I think that starts to put pressure on elsewhere.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with the discord in Dallas with that debacle with Randy Gregory. Totally unnecessary. And I think even they were that close to losing DeMarcus Lawrence over a couple of million. Funnily enough, I had Trayvon Diggs as a drop-off. I think expecting him to replicate 11 interceptions, I don't think so. Now, he could still have a good season, but if he could have 4 or 5 interceptions and allow half as many yards, it'd be as good or a better season, but it's not going to be. He's not going to get the buzz as one of the top cornerbacks in the league. Maybe he is that good and he can replicate 10 interceptions year after year, but that doesn't happen that often. Yeah, very unlikely. Yeah. So I still think, despite saying that he might have a big drop off, I still think he could have a good year.
Yeah,
I think interceptions.
In comparison, though, yeah.
I think interceptions can be being in the right place at the right time. If you look at Anthony Harris on the Eagles, a couple of years ago he had 7 interceptions, and he's come nowhere close since. I think it's a case of being in the right place at the right time.
Fair. The other one I kind of just jotted down in my notes today when I was planning to work was Seattle, but they're tanking. And it's fairly obvious at this stage they're tanking. There's a good quarterback draft class coming through next season, so they're in full blown tank mode, I think.
Yeah. I think I probably won't be paying much time or heed to Seattle this year, but next year.
No.
But next year maybe.
Yeah.
I've a couple of two, but I don't know if I'm that committed to them. It might be more of a discussion. I think Arizona might struggle. Last year they started hot out of the gate, and for the last few years they've finished the season pretty cold. Now next year they won't have D-Hop for the first 6 games. He's going to be suspended. So I don't think they'll be able to rely on the formula of starting hot and resting on that early streak. I don't think Kyler is particularly, his stats aren't that attractive without DeAndre Hopkins, so they'll have a lot to overcome. They've lost pieces on defense, Chandler Jones. I think where the NFC West was one of the most competitive divisions, I think that has been lost a little bit. Arizona's just been eroded away slightly.
Yeah. No, it has obviously taken a bit of a step back, especially seeing as the uncertainty in San Francisco were present obviously LA Rams are obviously Super Bowl champions and stuff like that, but
yeah,
it doesn't seem to be the gauntlet it once was.
No,
which is strange, the season after a Super Bowl champion coming from that division.
Yeah, absolutely. The last one I had was, I just want to see what the Titans look like without AJ Brown. I think there was a stat floating around out there that Tannehill is 1-4 without AJ Brown, and he's 10-2 with AJ Brown. Now, that's possibly a very cherry-picked stat, but I think the case has been made that it's AJ Brown had a greater influence on the Titans than Derrick Henry, because when Derrick Henry was injured last year, who was the backup in Tennessee?
The backup running back.
Filled in for the King.
Fieldman.
I can't remember. He was, but he did a good job. He did a very reasonable job. They still got the number one seed. And like I said, they went 1-4 when AJ Brown wasn't playing. So I just want to see. I'm not going to predict a massive fall off. I don't think they'll get the number one seed again, but I'd like to see how they fare.
Yeah, it's a soft division though.
It is a soft division. I could see them splitting with the Colts. If I squint my eyes, I could see them splitting with the Jags. I think they might sweep Houston, but you know, divisional games, anything could happen.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, well, I don't actually think I've got much more to add. I think that was a good intro, teaser, episode, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
We got maiden there.
Voyage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maiden voyage.
Some dubious statements. We're working stuff out.
Statements, yeah. We're working on getting better. But I suppose, look, you can find this wherever you find your podcast. If you're hearing this, you've obviously undoubtedly found it already. For any kind of subscribers to the Mid-Season Slump, you'd be aware that in the podcast description there is a link to our friends usasports.co.uk. just click the link to peruse the wide variety of sporting apparel, all American. I suppose that's all from me,
and I've nothing more to add either, my good friend Sasquatch.
Thank you and good night.
We better put some people in the end zone, right, Joe?
That's exactly right.
I mean, there's nobody inside the 10.
Get back, guys.
Here it is. The season's on the line. Two receivers left and right. McCown takes the snap. He steps up. He's all by himself. Fires into the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs.